One of the things I like to say to you tonight is that I'm alright. I struggle the path I take, it makes it hard sometimes, but alright. Choose my ways, do the days one day at a time, that's how it is. One day my kids will see their misery is in the taillights, in a pale moonlight, cradling stars like rocks in a sock. Crack you in the temple with a magic bag of paint. There's a whale of a moon tonight. Park cars in stock, relax and keep it simple, or the tragic hag awaits. It's the witch who aggravates you with which path to take to. Too much math to stake to, make the wrong breakthrough. Break on through to the other side, but you might not find what you want to. But that can't keep you from breaking down the doors that stand in front of you, that's absurd. Words simplify my emotions, I observe. Obscure observations, obviously a nerd in my observatory, hors d'oeuvre. Served in purgatory to learn the facts of life before you turn to burn or fly. Which way you wanna go, fire or sky? Depends on which way you wanna flow, higher than high. I'ma tell my kids some things they won't understand until the older, wise, intelligent minds will blossom with my vocals on their shoulders.
Well, then I came in, I said my name and I'm visiting. Taking notes like class, when I post them, you're listening. See, things are changing and for the better, so on your hanging and waiting for the next letter. We gave you E and you rolled with it. Must have heard it so good, man, your whole soul lifted. And that's different, but in a good way. I keep my masters and my values, don't care what they say. Say what you want, power to the people in my own restaurant. My own rest or whatever, it's my breath and endeavor. Hand off or Gandalf, easy pull the lever, man. Unconventional, all moves intentional, all soothe the emptiness. Anybody empty this? You can't, I got a never ending rant to rave about. People had to pot another plant. I'm a vine through your fence, a line through your dense dome. Rose out of concrete or the last dime to hit your ass home. First class, I'm cursed last. Try and capture the moment while I skirt past.
I'm walking through the hallway. I'm walking through the hallway.
To your brain cavity, pushing that positivity with a 20 bag full of funk, slanging that shit like electricity into your household appliance. Fine mental science, designed by G&E, be the beat, footprints, gentle giants. Earthquakes regulate, doors broken with our noses poked in. What's going on in this room? Better say both of us a token to catch that red eye flight down from LA back up to Oakland. Just like a Jedi Knight at midnight stride with mics for stroking.
Hallway, full of doors.
Problems go away, I'm a stowaway on this train. When with the wind, I might blow away, I'm a grain, tiny granule. Just one man, who'll last with my outlaw sidekicks? Ride without a mask, have you tried this? Put down your pride, just be human. Patterns come around and go around, so what you doing? This bitch is brewing in, where's the union? I probably shouldn't talk, I've been lost in my balloon, then it popped. Cause on your show, I'm just a prop, trying to get my foot in, but nobody heard me knock, I'll knock louder. And when they answer, I won't shout or bang, just hang and sprinkle my magic powder, hook up a router and spread throughout the system, making believers instead of victims. Take future leaders in, then we fix them, return them to their lives for the mission.
No pride, no prize. Remove your disguise. Sometimes originality alienates, but never more than lies. As we cruise down a never-ending hallway full of doors, always the threat of a backdraft when we kick them to the floor. We can sit back and laugh at mistakes made in the past, but one break too long taken, it kicks you in the ass. One bad mistake made, you swim in a lake full of glass. One wrong handshake, just another snake in the grass.
Everybody, welcome back to Mapping Comics. This is your host, Terrence Moreau, and this week I'm going to be talking about Frazier Irving, the digital art chameleon, the sable brush man, the wild experimenter, the mad Photoshop bandit. Frazier Irving's been around forever. He kind of came to prominence in the mid-aughts, at least for the American market, for the American diamond distributed market. With Seven Soldiers, Clary and the Witch Boy, and his collaboration with Grant Morrison, and has since gone on to continue to have a wonderful kind of exposure with that partnership with Morrison specifically. But the British market, the 2000 AD folks, will know that he goes way, way, way back. Specifically, he worked on Future Shocks in the 90s, in the very late 90s, and then eventually would come to prominence doing Judge Dredd work and a collaboration with, I believe, Gordon Rennie. Gordon Rennie, on Necronauts, 2000 AD strip. And for that first portion of Irving's career, you would never guess where he would end up, doing full digital art, fully colored, fully painted, because Fraser Irving, early on in his career, is like I kind of hinted at with all of his little titles at the beginning there. Fraser Irving was once a diehard sable brush man, a dyed in the wool, pen and ink. Well, I'm sure he used a pen sometimes too, but brush and ink, India ink, traditional artist. And my understanding is, one thing, you should absolutely go pick up the Modern Masters edition of that's on Fraser Irving, rather, the interview with him in the background and kind of just the insight into the guy's life and his journey and what where the art fits into that and his thinking behind all of his changes is super, super interesting. But early on, he was absolutely a diehard traditional tools artist. No digital thinking at all. And he had a very traditionally grounded training in illustration and in form and lighting and composition and reduction of image to simple shapes and the recreation of those shapes. And you can see that that's one of the through lines of his style, is that underlying illustration painting background, that very, very strong life drawing understanding about how light works and how form and shadow works. And that's, again, no matter how much the guy's art changes over the years, whether he's using the traditional tools early on in his career or later on with his kind of digital explosion, his mid-period experimentalism and all of this, there's always an incredibly strong grounding in the traditional understanding of lighting, composition, and value structure. And, of course, just figure drawing in general, no matter what the figure is. He does very, very realistic figures, although they are often highly exaggerated in their perspective, which is another through line through the guy's art, and kind of relates a little bit to what I've talked about before about stoners and perspective control and all of this. Because one of the other through lines to his art is perspective of distortion and, fisheye perspective and bending of the camera and all of this, which I'll come back to. Actually, I won't mention it here. I'll go back to the beginning of his career. So when Fraser is the sable brush man early on, he always did have a kind of a concern with color, but there's a desire to explore the line that you see early on in Fraser's work from, like I say, his work in Future Shocks in 2000 AD into Judge Dredd and Necronauts, where he wants to go everywhere with the line that he can while still maintaining the illustrative grounding that I was talking about, the painting grounding, the understanding of shape and lighting and all of that. And the tension between those two things creates what I think is the essential quality of Fraser's art, because there is this absolute real-world grounding and understanding about how to represent things, how to represent real-world things, objects, forms, structures, the figure, etc., that obviously has been incredibly well integrated into Fraser's image-making idioms, but it gets shifted and distorted and swung around all over the place based on, you could say based on the material, but I get the feeling when you look at Fraser's work over the years that no matter what the material is, that's how Fraser tells stories. That this heavy illustrative and painting grounding, which then gets swung through perspective shifts and fisheye lenses and exaggerated proportion and slight distortions here or there that do fit directly into what I've talked about before about just, you have to be okay with some of the distortions and the mistakes in your art, of course. But there's a a way where you can see that Frasier is accentuating these things sometimes. Yeah, sometimes you can tell, okay, that, you know, the hand is maybe a little bit bigger than it should be, or the face is, you know, kind of twisted or distorted. But that's totally, I mean, that's how things should be. But there are times when you can tell that it's not just a thing of happenstance or a thing of production, where you just have to, you know, keep working and keep going. But it is a thing of, okay, there's a very, very clear... And as Frasier's work has gone on, he's become more interested in distorting of perspective and all of this. There's there's that one. I'm thinking very specifically of his Batman work, or with maybe it was Batman and Robin by that point or whatever. But where the Joker is dancing on the one dude, what's his name, the doctor guy, I don't know. He's dancing on the grave, and it's that huge fisheye kind of rotation. I forget the exact term, but the perspective bends all the way around the Joker. But because of Frasier's understanding of shape and structure and light and rendering and all of this, there's a very, very heavy realistic grounding to it. And that is the essential nature of Frasier's art. And yes, you could say, okay, well, you know, in that moment there is a form-content interaction going on there, and the way that Frasier tells the story accentuates the emotional tone that the narrative requires in that moment, sure. But like I say, that tool of distortion and those heavy grounding tools of illustration and shape and light and rendering are always there. That is Frasier. And the way that those two things, the distortions and the heavy grounding, get played as his career goes on, is, I think, the most interesting thing about examining his art. So early on, the form that all of that stuff takes is that of the you know, black and white ink art and the language of the line. So Frasier never goes too much into the traditional cartooning mode of the line. In the way that someone like Paul Pope has a massive variety of line that incorporates everyone from Toth to Krapax, etc., 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 and of course synthesizes into its own thing as the Pope's career goes on. But that structure, that whole cartooning, line-drawing approach isn't the school of illustration and image-making that Frasier comes out of. So when I say that he has a massive variety of line, I don't, of course, mean that his holding lines have a, you know, a specific quality to them, because he doesn't come out of the cartooning school, he comes out of the painting school. And this goes back to a little bit of what I hinted at last week about, you know, the painter as cartoonist. Because Frasier doesn't have a line. Frasier is not one of those cartoonists, and the way that art comics and all of this are going now is there's been a lot of rejection of the line as a thing, and much more emphasis on texture and much more emphasis on color and all of that. But because Frasier doesn't have a line, when I say that his early Sable Brushman phase, if you call it a phase, it's a mature form that he gets to, and then hilariously enough, half throws away. But that early form of his, that early iteration of his artistic expression, is massively varied in its rendering, but it doesn't have that cartoonish quality, so you can't read it in the same way that you would. You know, the folks who come out of the more traditional school of cartooning, you can't read his line because he doesn't use holding lines. He doesn't use, you know, outlines of things, because he comes again, you know, there's no outlines of things in painting. There's no outlines of things in illustration. It's all forms and rendering. And in that, Frasier's drawings don't read the same way that a lot of mainstream drawing reads. And all this is kind of what I mean about the painter as cartoonist, because there's no line to get an emotional quality from. And so everything else, the rendering of his forms and the distortion of the forms becomes the thing that you have to read instead. And so that massive variety of line that you can see through Necronauts specifically, through some of his Future Shocks, and through Judge Dredd, gets combined with this ultra-high contrast lighting and this perfect understanding, well, not perfect, but, you know, this incredibly high level understanding of form and figure work, and again, shifting of perspective within that, foreshortening, all of those things, to create this effect that is very, very discordant, because you keep expecting there to be a continuous line that will hold your emotional tone. And so when Necronauts issues holding lines completely and just goes for odd angles of rendering and weird textures all over the place, it creates a very, very different reading experience that demands a painter's eye. Well, just a different eye of reading than you would traditional cartooning. So specifically with regards to Necronauts, which is kind of his breakout work, because people had known about him from Future Shocks and all that, but it's his first really extended 2000 AD thing, and there's such experimentalism all over the place, and there's, like I say, there's a very, very strong grounding in form and high contrast lighting, and a considerable desire to experiment with the language of the brush. But here's where I'm going to start getting critical. There's no continuous grammar to it. I can remember picking up a random comic from, I can't even remember who the artists were, and I didn't, like I say, I don't even remember who they were, and this is just a random comic in a back issue bin somewhere, but I remember picking up and flipping through it and going, this has got to be done by like 10 inkers or something, and I remember looking up the credits box and going, oh shit, yeah, this is the whole, there's no consistent style here, there's no consistent approach here, there's no grammar to the visuals, there's just a lot of noise. And that actually, that can really, really work with, you know, something like Necronauts, where there is a chaos to the story, and I've talked before about, yeah, where discordancies in art, or discordances in art can actually work with the storytelling to make it stronger. But if you want something that is, God, this is going to sound so weird, but elegantly discordant, you know, that's not what what Necronauts is. And there are moments, there are totally moments of what I would describe as like elegant discord, where there clearly is a holistic approach. There's a page where, I believe it's Houdini, I think this is Houdini, fighting against some Cthulhu monsters. And I'll see about taking a picture of this page or finding someone who's scanned it online. But, oh yeah, no, this is Houdini, all right, yeah. But there is a consistent visual grammar across both spreads, where you can open up the page and it works as a unified piece of visual art that is relatively consistently rendered. Even if you go in and there's, you know, weird, if you try to find an exact system of it, you know, you get more chaotic the more you zoom in. But there's such experimenting all over the place in this comic. And you could take, you know, any of these individual panels and you could extrapolate a whole, you know, rule set for like, oh, you could do, you know, harden the style more specifically here and be less experimental and all of this. And the comic I don't think would be as good because it wouldn't be as wacky and chaotic. But one of the things that I'll continue to return to with Fraser's art is that massive experimentalism with, like I say, you know, the thing swings around all over the place but always has a grounding in form and lighting and construction and all this, you know, traditional rigors of illustration and painting. But I think that there is always a little bit of overreaching, which is a good thing for an artist, but Fraser always overreaches himself a little bit and doesn't. There are only a few pieces, I think, in his career, and of course they appear later. Well, that's not true. I'm being really unfair. That's not true. There's lots of pieces, but there are just as many, and again, this is a good thing, that are just these experiments and these beautiful experiments that have these weird, like, you want it to be something else, but as soon as it, you know, it became something else, it wouldn't be what it was anymore, which is, you know, God, so obvious. But looking at Necronauts, there is such a chaos about it, but such a weird discordance about it. There is no like I say, consistent grammar. There's no repetition of shot or repetition of rendering style. You know, the thing just changes around all over the place depending on what Fraser wants to experiment with. You know, and a lot of the rendering styles, a lot of the line styles that you see in early Sable Brushman phase, Fraser Irving, you know, Future Shocks, Necronauts, Judge Dredd especially, and his Judge Death arc. All of those lines would go on to kind of appear in a more subdued fashion in his kind of second phase, when he moves out of being the kind of Sable Brushman and moves into kind of being the Frasier Irving that we know now, which, like I say, isn't really a cartoonist as much as it is a painter, and a very specific type of painter, a digital matte painter. So there is this mid-period Frasier Irving that kind of that shows up specifically with Storming Heaven, and that the psychedelic hippie pink the triad color scheme, the pink that's not quite cyan, but like cyanish green color, and then yellow, and the hippie with the long hair and the flowers and all that. And that's where that psychedelic version of colors that we associate with Frasier Irving, and the over the top kind of super bright digital coloring, all that stuff that we now associate with Frasier Irving's approach first appears in Storming Heaven. And you can also see that he was doing traditional line drawing underneath it in a style relatively reminiscent of Necronauts, but that's where those lines and that style and the old Sable Brushman identity kind of it doesn't get thrown away, because he continues to use those lines and that approach, but where it first becomes subordinate to the colors, where Frasier begins to experiment and play around and becomes much more fascinated with communicating through color, even if what he's communicating isn't necessarily the most definite. It's Storming Heaven is this high contrast technicolor, triad color scheme shout, at mainstream comics and all of this. And when combined with all of the distortions and with the, slightly, not apocalyptic, but, hippie apocalyptic or whatever, tone to the story, it worked out really, really well. The chaos was perfect there. It didn't need, any kind of the consistent grammar mostly, like I say, came through the triadic color scheme and slight analogous shifts in the triadic color scheme. But that mid-period Frasier Irving, the matte painter Frasier Irving, it's a very odd period for him. And you can see him he refers to that period in that Modern Masters, interview as kind of, he was the digital prophet, kind of, espousing Photoshop and experimenting with a Cintiq and with a tablet and kind of talking to other comics guys about, Jock specifically he mentions, in that Modern Masters interview. But he was apparently, just trying to figure out how to do some kind of, digital thing and make it work to his satisfaction. And he does this short thing, I believe it's called From Grace, where he tried to do this black and white digital thing that will, as an approach, will repeat several times throughout his career. And this very specific black and white digital rendering approach to image making. But that I keep returning to this matte painting idea because I want to talk about this where I personally first encountered Frasier Irving, and I remember his name as being a weird thing. It had a Z in the first name, and that was the first time I had encountered that. But in a matte painting book, I remember this was back when my brief time in art school. I remember getting a matte painting book and flipping through it, and there was Frasier Irving doing a I think it was a collection of like concept art articles or something, Concept Art the magazine, something like that. It was some collection of articles that had been previously published, I believe. But there was Frasier Irving doing a tutorial, doing a walkthrough of one of his 2000 AD covers, and saying, okay, look, here's how I draw out the figures and do the brush ink work on the figures on a separate piece of paper, and then I compose them in Photoshop and color them in Photoshop. And that's what I mean about that weird mid-period thing, where Frasier Irving clearly was being the digital prophet and talking to folks like Jock, and eventually to folks like Fiona Staples. But he was also very clearly trying to figure out what the whole matte painting thing was, because he was, this book was not, it wasn't a comics thing, like how to draw comics. It was a matte painting book. It was a concept art book, mostly focusing on digital art. And so there's a whole other separate from the comics image making community, the sequential image making community. There's the whole matte painting and concept art painting community, and of course industry, whether that be for video games, tabletop games or movies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the matte painters, of course, have been working with Photoshop for years and years and years and years and years, long before the comic book community got turned on to Cintiqs and tablets and Photoshop and all of this. The matte painters were all over that shit. And it's hard to tell how much exposure Fraser had to that stuff, but considering he appeared in this book that I discovered, which I probably have buried somewhere, I'll see if I can't find it. But considering he appeared there, I think it would be logical to draw the conclusion that he had some in with the old, you know, illustrative painting approach to image making and what was going on with the matte painters and their experiments in Photoshop and digital painting in general. So, like I say, Fraser didn't just throw away entirely the brush approach. He continues to do Judge Dredd strips in the old his old Sable Brushman style after he did Storming Heaven, and that brief burst of experimentalism that is Storming Heaven kind of finds different outlets throughout the mid 2000s as this. You know, the digital prophet, the mad Photoshop bandit period of Fraser's career kind of begins, and he does all of these, you know, little projects throughout. He goes from like I say, he goes from Marvel to DC. He does the Clarion the Witch Boy thing. He does Iron Man. He does the Inhumans eventually. But before that, of course, he's still working in 2000 AD. He does what's that thing called? The Simping Detective. Like I say, he did From Grace. In the From Grace was done in the his first approach to digital all digital art, and was done in that black and white value structure only style. All of these weird the Simping Detective, all of these weird mid 2000s kind of strivings for form and working habit, you know, a proper approach to what am I doing here? What's something that pleases me that is a thing that I can repeat? And of course, it's a continuous evolution, and you can see him trying to figure out a thing that pleases him. What the approach to image making that is efficient, and what, you know, he's kind of happy with and that he can produce in throughout the whole mid period of the 2000s. And Clarion the Witch Boy is this weird, the thing that of course he came to prominence with, is this weird mid period thing where he's trying to balance that old brush tendency and the safety of, you know, the control of the brush, because you can clearly tell he knows exactly what he wants to do with it, but with the desire to experiment. And he actually, I believe he talks about the safety net that is the brush, because it is, he does have such a mastery over it by the time he reaches Clarion that it's kind of a thing that he talks about falling back on a little bit. And this thing, he's like, well, you know, I'm not too sure about giving up just yet. And so Clarion the Witch Boy and a lot of those mid-period works become this thing of, okay, well, where does color fit in? How much am I still relying on the brush, et cetera, et cetera. And so by the time he, a couple of years after Clarion, when he's doing stuff like The Inhumans and Azrael, which, you know, he's, like I say, he's doing all this mainstream schlock, but that's fine for what it is or whatever. And as a proving ground for who kind of Fraser will become, it's this really, really interesting place for him to experiment and get paid. But it's not the most interesting work. It's really, really not. And a lot of Fraser's storytelling ability, while his ability to just do, you know, panel-to-panel transition is all great, I we'll get a little critical and we'll talk about how that all that is fine, you know, the panel-to-panel stuff works, but without the traditional language of the line, when you're being a painter, there has to be certain resonances. And Fraser doesn't get, it takes him a long, long time to figure out how to make his lighting work. That's really what it is. Personally, I'm not a big fan of Fraser's, that mid-period work, because it doesn't, like I say, there's no elegance. You know what I mean? Like I was saying about Necronauts, there's lots of experimenting all over the place, but there isn't a whole lot of grammar. And it's very difficult for me to get into specifics here when I'm kind of jumping around between works and all of this. Maybe in the future I'll come back and talk about something a little more specific. But that mid-period work, in my opinion, is most interesting in his Frankenstein project, which was one of those black and white things that shows Fraser's evolution as a, specifically as a digital artist. So he goes from Grace, which is this very messily drawn, well, not messily, but maybe messily is a okay way to say it. It's rendered a little more primitively, with a little more primitive shapes. You know, the shapes aren't rendered with a high amount of resolution. It's much more sketchy, which is part of the point. It was intentional. But he goes from doing this black and white all digital art for the first time in From Grace to doing the same thing, black and white all digital art, but with a little more resolution and with a much more conscious eye towards visual storytelling with his Frankenstein project. And Frankenstein is one of his lesser known things because, you know, it wasn't in the direct market in any way, and I believe had a very limited release. But I recommend that everybody look up this project of his, mostly because you can read it for free. Fraser serialized it. There's a whole thing of politics and economics behind it, and a whole ridiculous story that just goes to show how fucked a lot of comic book publishing actually is, and the respect of that the medium has within larger book publishing and all of this, and the fuck-upness of book publishing in general these days, and maybe just in general, period. But the project floundered for a number of different reasons, and Fraser ended up serializing it last year, if you can call it that, reposting the art on his Tumblr. FraserIrving.tumblr.com, click his archive, and find that stuff, because that is where I think it's still one of my favorite digital projects of his, because he had full creative control, and he was able to break out the project and just tell, you know, the Mary Shelley Frankenstein story in the way that he wanted over a set number of pages, and in exactly the way that you know, was comfortable for him. And in that sense, when you strip away kind of what I hinted at a little bit last week, when you strip away the market aspect of it and you just give the artist the creative control and you say, you know, express yourself, here you go, within certain constraints, you know, like I say, he had a page count, he had a time limit, you know, and all of this, but within those boundaries, he was able to do whatever to make the piece his. And that's still one of my favorite things of his, because there's no shit computer lettering that isn't his coming in, some letterer, you know, who's, you know, lettering 12 other comics that week, you know, understandably so, because he has to put food on the table, all that. But, like, there's none of that. Like, everything on the page is Fraser, and it is this complete artistic work in its way. It isn't, you know, personal in the sense that it's his, and, you know, it's not, you know, his story or whatever, but it's personal in the sense that it's told and structured exactly the way that he wanted it. It's his own interpretation. You know, it's his own take. Yeah, I really do think that it's worth looking at for anyone who is interested both in just silent visual storytelling, because the version that he put up had no captions. And it's still one of my favorite things of his, because I do think that it shows this within bounds massive amount of expression. And Fraser talks in that Modern Masters interview about trying to find a look in his art that is very obviously digital, and then you would look at it and go, that's made on a computer, but that also looks like it has the hand of the artist about it, that very clearly, you know, like, they wasn't just generated by a computer, but it was painted on a computer, where it very clearly has, you know, those, what we would now, most people can recognize as, you know, Photoshop brushes, the hard round, you know what I mean, the hard round shapes of the Photoshop brushes, and all of that rendering is totally obvious. Like, the language and structure of the Photoshop brush line is the weird artificiality of it, and yet life that Fraser is able to imbue it in it, is all there in Frankenstein. And in that sense, like I say, it's one of my favorite things of his. And that approach, that value structure only, no hues, no overblown lighting tricks or any kind of weird perspective shifts or any of that. It's Fraser working in a relatively staid, relatively bounded fashion. And within those constraints, a very interesting project emerges. And a similar thing happens later, like I say, with this kind of three-part black and white illustration project thing that I'm kind of drawing as a through line through Fraser's career here, where by the time his mid-period experimental phase is kind of starting to end towards like 2007, 2008, you know, he's done Azrael, he's done The Inhumans with David Hein and a little bit of Iron Man and that weird Robin issue or two issues or whatever it was. Then through all of that, he does, or after all that, excuse me, he does this Doctor Strange project, this very, very short Doctor Strange comic with Karen Gillan. And that black and white comic, he talks about it in the Modern Masters interview, is this turning point in his career where his approach shifts and he begins to kind of rein himself back in. And the experimental phase, it doesn't end, but it pars itself back. You know, it begins to realize what was successful about itself and begins to kind of become a little more self-similar. And so Fraser issues a lot of any kind of backgrounds in that story, if I'm remembering correctly. It's been a while since I read it. But he ups the resolution on his figure work. So all of the value structure rendering of hardening up his musculature and of getting his weird perspective shifts all right, everything begins to tighten up, and you can tell that he begins to really, really focus in a very different way. And that the underlying image-making structure, like what he's concerned with rendering out, how much exacting proportions he's going for, whether or not he's willing to go for kind of hard and fast facial features. You can see that his tendency to distort facial features a little bit in the in a bit of an overacting, over-emotional kind of weirdly over-dramatized way that really works for me. I really like it. Begins to kind of come to the fore, and a lot of the mistakes, quote unquote, like I say, all the weird proportional distortions begin to feel a little more meaningful and intentional, and everything, like I said, begins to harden into his approach that you know he has currently. The textures begin to appear, all of the stuff that we now associate with modern Fraser Irving, all of those weird like cloud textures and kind of half explosion type textures, all that stuff first appears in Doctor Strange, and it's this weird short little comic that it becomes his Rosetta Stone for his, like, Not his where he's at now, but for the next few years, where he begins to work more specifically in black and white, and then color, and begins to integrate texture and certain tricks of layout, depending on who he's working with, of course, into his working mode or whatever. After Doctor Strange comes this period where he reconnects with Grant Morrison, and where he becomes prevalent in the American scene again and super well known. Super well known. He becomes, you know, superstar Fraser Irving. But there's that weird mid period where he gets famous. Well, not gets famous, but is you know, well known for Clarion in 2005, and then, you know, drops off the map again. Kind of becomes experimental for a while and does all of these weird, you know, mid tier superhero things, and does this Frankenstein thing in the background that's super interesting, and then, you know, reconstructs again for Doctor Strange, which I believe is 2010. I might be wrong about that. And somewhere in there, and this is one of those things that there's a great story that I'm not privy to. But somewhere in there, he comes in contact with Fiona Staples, and they're both of their approaches in the matte painting sense and in the traditional illustration and lighting and color sense, both of them begin to cross-pollinate and influence each other. And that's where Fraser's color scheme really begins to become his. And he puts it in the Modern Master interview, he learns how to combine certain Photoshop layer renderings or layer filters or something, filter combinations or something like that, I can't remember exactly, that he got from Fiona Staples. And so a lot of So like I say, somewhere in that mid-tier experimental phase of Fraser, that mid-aughts, just pre or just post, maybe somewhere in their Doctor Strange phase, he comes in contact with Fiona Staples and begins to understand his own tendencies towards psychedelic coloring a little better, and begins to integrate that into the whole digital scheme. So once he, once that Doctor Strange bit happens, and he, you know, learns to, well, not learns, but creates for himself this approach of, like I say, this tightening of resolution, this saying, okay, I'm not going to, you know, experiment over there. I know kind of what my approach to image making is. Once that begins to happen, he begins to experiment in other ways. And once he does that that Return of Bruce Wayne thing, which integrates all of these you know, weird, like, the spinning galaxy thing, or the end of time, whatever that, the time point, whatever that that thing was in that issue with the... I can't even remember. But the imagery, see, the imagery sticks with me, and the color use sticks with me. And that's where his first use in his modern work of that horribly overused, and I wish Fraser wouldn't use it, the blue and orange thing, you know, that pops up all over movie posters and theatrical advertisement and all of this, that blue and orange opposite color scheme, I can't remember, it's complementary, whatever it is, first appears in that Return of Bruce Wayne book, and he begins to experiment a lot more with his color use and gets a lot more into color theory, where previously it was just, you know, kind of experimental, all over the place, histrionic, just searching around. It's, like I say, it's this Technicolor scream of a thing. There isn't, you don't get the feeling that there's a system behind it, you know? Like I say, there's not much grammar to it. And as Fraser goes on, you can see him trying to integrate his color schemes and his color structures into the grammar of the comic a little more. He plays, he gets a little more conservative, strangely, you know, with 2- and 3-tone color schemes, and, you know, keeps certain things always held. Like in, this will become a more important thing as his late period maturation goes on, and he moves into doing the weirdness of shit like He-Man Skeletor, which he did late last year. But that early Return of Bruce Wayne issue or whatever was where you can see explosive orange, that really, really warm orange, and he begins to explore within very tight ranges of colors, and he becomes much more fascinated with what he can do with Photoshop within, like I say, within those tight bounds of restriction that always have been there, in the sense of his figure work, his understanding of lighting and shape and all of this. That was, of course, always there, but how he rendered it out and what his approach to tool use and language of line and all of this was experimental in his mid-phase and all of this, and slowly all of that stuff begins to drop away and harden, the stuff that remains begins to harden into an approach that we now recognize as, you know, modern digital Fraser Irving, that eschews most of his old sable brush man tendencies, you know, of the language of line, the rendering of forms being weird and discordant, because now he's not working with, you know, hard and fast black and whites and, you know, the language of a brush. He's working with the language of texture and of color and of form. Shapes still play a part in you know, his early form when he's the sable brush man or whatever, but it's less about the exact shapes of things and more about how those shapes are rendered, because the shape of things, you know, it's always tightly proportioned but distorted, you know, as things go on, and, you know, Fraser becomes moves out of the sable brush man thing and the experimentalist phase, and moves into the mature Photoshop bandit phase of his career. Shapes become a little more hard and fast. He begins to, you know, for example, with that that late period stuff, his most recent stuff, that Batman Zero issue and that He-Man thing, he's very much working with shape, and he wants to play with how he renders shape, the textures that he uses in rendering shape, and the colors that he assigns them, and of course the amount of lighting, the resolution that those shapes have depending on the lighting qualities. There's usually, of course, is high contrast lighting that you know, recalls a figure under a bright spotlight in a studio, but the way that all of that stuff gets rendered is rendered with a different color, with a different texture, with a different background color or background texture, different background structure or form. And then, of course, he moves from The Return of Bruce Wayne and moves into that Batman and Robin arc that really, really kind of showcases everything that I've been talking about. All the proportional distortion, the fisheye lens stuff, the use of limited but very experimental color schemes that swing between slight analogous within a certain range, like all of those blues and purples and all of that. All of that is within a very tight range on the color scheme. And I believe he's using, he switches between several different things. He switches between analogous, triadic, and complementary all over the place, but within a relatively tight rule set. None of it, of course, is really done for a whole lot of, like, narrative meaning. It's still just, you know, the lighting. This scene is done with this color scheme. This character is, you know, drawn with this color. You know, things are lit by this color and rendered this way here. But it isn't. At no point does it do anything like, you know, like Cold Heat-ish, where there's an emotional shift that is denoted by colors. You know, that's, no one has thought to use. At least I don't think there's any of that. Maybe I'm missing something. There may very well be. But I don't think anyone has thought to use Frasier, any writer has thought to use Frasier like that, you know, to say, hey, man, can we do some kind of, you know, emotional shift thing here, you know, that is much more influenced by art and much less influenced by film and narrative and literary narrative. And I don't think that's happened yet. And Frasier, of course, has had to experiment on his own a lot with that kind of thing. I'm going to jump over Zombie and Shade real fast here, and kind of, because both of those, like I say, are a little less, there's no, that's just Frasier having to experiment where he can, because it is such a dominant mode mainstream comic written. I mean, it's James Robinson and John Rosen, you know, they're not, they aren't experimental in that way, you know what I mean? They're telling very, very traditional narratives with, you know, characters and scenes and all of this, even if the ideas are sometimes, you know, weird and that, you know, comic, the way that you're allowed to be in mainstream, slightly left of center mainstream comics. But they're much less interesting in terms of the way that Frasier's art is used. There's lots of interesting stuff in Zombie and Shade, and I'll come back to it in just a second. But where Frasier, the mature artist, like I say, in his evolution from the you know, early brush-based, you know, sable, you know, black and white ink line language of form, structure, and rendering phase into the experimental digital art phase of the mid and late aughts, where he's come now, I think, is typified not by, you know, the Return of Bruce Wayne, Batman and Robin, Zombie, Shade, and that stuff. I think it's typified more by the weird-ass Batman Number Zero and He-Man comics of, like, the last, I don't know, 6 months or so. Of course, he's now head, you know, head deep in Brian Bendis fucking comics, in you know, Uncanny X-Men or something. And a lot of his art that's come out of that looks really, really interesting. But not interesting in the way that Batman Zero and He-Man are, because there, that's genuinely where, and Batman Number Zero to me was more interesting than He-Man was. He-Man, he's experimenting very specifically with, and in a very literalist fashion with, okay, this scene is drawn in this style that is very, very different, and you know, is black and white and high contrast, and so represents memory and all of this. And you know, in the more modern stuff, it's the Frasier Irving, you know, kind of, weirdly, Frasier's modern color scheme has gotten darker. It's super, super weird. I don't know if that's because he's working with the Cintiq now, and so he doesn't want to, like, the brightness of a screen is, like, preventing his pages from getting too bright. It's hard to tell, but his stuff doesn't it doesn't have a high contrast in the way that it used to, and I think that's one of his flaws in his later work, especially, like I say, Zombie, Shade, etc. But that He-Man thing has some very specific, really interesting high contrast lighting and all of this, but it's super literal. It's super, super literal. And so when you're kind of comparing what the mature kind of directions that he seems to be going in with He-Man and Batman Number Zero, I'd like to see him do more of the Batman Zero stuff, even though that is the stuff that has the least amount of contrast, and so doesn't, his shape structures don't stand out there, you know? The one page of Batman Zero, and this kind of goes directly to what I would like to see Frasier do more of, there is that one page of Batman Number Zero that is this, like, has these weird, like, lime green, has a lime green top and bottom panels that has Batman just talking at the reader. And in the middle, it's this transition of the bat symbol, like, it starts as Batman falling into the panel and then transitions into the bat symbol, and then the bat symbol breaks apart while I think it's like a skull. I don't have the page in front of me, but I think it's like a skull and then a Kali Yuga symbol or something like that. But that's the kind of stuff that I would want to see Frazier Irving do more of. And the reason I think why Batman Number Zero is this weird, experimental, really interesting thing that is mostly visually driven is, of course, because, you know, the person who wrote that comic, if I'm remembering correctly, is Chris Burnham, you know, who's an artist, who probably just said, hey, you know, hey, Frazier, you know, do what you want. Tell the story visually. And so Frazier does that, and it is this really interesting little experimental comic that has the one thing that I think prefaces the what I would like to see as the future of Frazier Irving's art, which is, you know, that weird, you know, symbol transition thing. But that's what I would want to see out of all cartoonists is, you know, do a totally visually driven, you know, strip out your language, just do, like, you know, symbol transitions and you know, form transformations and figure transformations and all of that. And I'd love to see that out of Frazier, sure, but you know the rigors of the market probably mean that won't happen. And I'd like to really I'm super interested to see what Uncanny X-Men will bring from the guy, because I mean, yeah, I'm sure it'll bring a lot of fucking talking heads because it's a goddamn Brian Bendis comic, but where Frazier goes from here, because there's still a lot of experimentalism, there's still a lot of, you know, trying to figure out what his working method is, even across, you know, Zombie, Shade, Batman Zero, He-Man, all of that stuff is still super experimental, even though a lot of his working method has hardened, and you can see that he has a relatively confident approach to, you know, working in Photoshop and all of that. He still is playing around, I think, a little too much, leaning a little too much on the textures, leaning a little too much on the discordant colors. And this goes back to what I was saying about his storytelling quality, where, yes, there is a very, very clear storytelling quality that Frazier has from panel to panel, but I don't think he can integrate yet enough of his rendering style, with his storytelling in the panel-to-panel sense. I think a lot of his panel-to-panel stuff is still relatively wanting. And I don't know if that's because of just time constraints in mainstream comics, because there's lots and lots of, I mean, just really, really great stuff that the guy has in some of his books. But there's other times when you'll look at a page and you'll go, like, that doesn't work. And a lot of the times also when I think that, it's due to poor construction on the part of the writer, and sometimes on the part of the letterer, where I'm like, the letterer is having to clutter this page, and in a way that even if the page, you know, there was less words on the page, like, it would still look weird because of this horrible discordance between the terrible, you know, artificial stereality of, you know, computer coloring, or computer lettering, with the approach to image making that Frazier has. Like, I would love to see a silent, or even a hand-lettered, like, a hand-lettered Frazier Irving comic that was, like, I would like to see Frazier do, like, I don't know, a short 8-page or 16-page comic, totally written by him, whatever he wants to do, that, I mean, ideally would, you know, be hand-lettered by him so that everything on it was him. Just, you know, release that thing on Gumroad for a dollar or whatever. Everybody will buy it, you know what I mean? Because it's Frazier Irving, it's a dollar. You know, I mean, maybe everybody won't be, I don't know, but that's what I would love to see. You know, that's what I think would be great, because he's always going to be shackled to the mainstream comics assembly line approach, you know, and that's why I love that that Frankenstein comic so much, is because it's one of the few bits where you can tell that it's holistically Frazier, you know, and there's only a little, you have to take everything else with a grain of salt, you know what I mean? You have to go, okay, well, yeah, here's Grant Morrison's crazy Batman story, or you have to go, here's, you know, He-Man, Skeletor, or whatever, all the way through, and to follow the guy's, you know, approach to image making, and just to follow the, you know, the evolution of his artistic, you know, approach or whatever, And so, like I said, I'm really interested to see what happens with Uncanny, because I can't help but compare Frasier's digital approach to, of course, and I mentioned her earlier, to Fiona Staples' approach, because both of them are working in a very similar way, in the sense that it's all them, the coloring, the storytelling, the character design, everything, except, of course, the stories. You know, they're both working, you know, obviously Fiona has a consistent artistic partner, and Frasier, you know, jumps around a lot. At least Fiona now does in her current project. But there is, despite all of the similarities and the previous collaboration and learning that the two, I think, had at some point in the mid-aughts or something, there is such a difference in their approach, where Fiona Staples, like, I would describe her approach as, like, pop art conservative, you know, where there is a, and if you want to talk about, like, matte painting as comics art, like, that is what Fiona Staples does, is matte painting. Very limited, mostly, of course, gesture and shape-based, with limited rendering, matte painting. That's what it is. And of course, Frasier's, while you could still totally describe it as matte painting, is more of, like, you know, the psychedelic experimentation, where Fiona will play occasionally with altered perspective, or with, you know, forced perspective, or, you know, something that isn't just very middle ground, kind of cinematic driven visual storytelling. And she's very, very good at that. I mean, don't get me wrong. She's amazing at it. But where Frasier, he can't. It's almost like he can't stand that. You know, when he does fall back on that, on a certain level of just very staid, kind of panel to panel transition stuff, it works. But it's nowhere near as interesting as watching him do, like, perspective distortion and all of this. He seems to be much more at home with, and he can't seem to let go, even when. The material may not require it, you know. There are moments in his comics where, you know, weird perspectives and experiments, you know, just art experiments will take place that probably isn't, you know, called out by the artist, but that Frasier's, like I say, he can't seem to help himself but to indulge in, which is great, of course. And it's part of why I'd like to see him just, you know, go crazy on his own project a little bit. And as his approach to rendering continues to not harden, but to become a little more solidly fluid, if that makes sense, where you can see that he's got rules that he's more willing to follow, that are, of course, you know, his own rules that he's made up for himself. And you can see it on some of his Uncanny X-Men covers, where he's playing with those teals and reds, and his rendering of form is a little harder, and he's not doing multi-stage lighting, so he's not doing, like, you know, a layer of light pink and then a layer of slightly darker pink and then a layer of, you know, even you know, darker pink, even heavier value there. It's just, you know, one value of perfectly chosen, you know, reddish pink or whatever, however you want to call it, and then the perfectly chosen value of, you know, teal blue that are just, you know, juxtaposed without any kind of rendering transition between the two that is much more shape based. And of course, in those Uncanny X-Men covers, he's playing with texture in a different way. And that's kind of what I say about why I skipped over Zombie and Shade a little bit, is because all of that stuff has a very, very similar visual feel to it all the way through. Like I talked about last week in reference to Matt Seneca's comment on comic books are burning in hell, where I was saying, you know, stop drawing this, where he was saying, stop drawing the same thing over and over again. And there's a lot of Zombie and Shade that, yeah, okay, you know, is still bright and amazing and cool, but it's a lot of it's made on the same, you know, dominant mode image making rules, and it feels relatively constrained because of that. It feels like Frasier experimenting within even tighter boundaries of narrative storytelling and all of this and visual storytelling that are interesting to look at, but don't do as much for me. You know, so I'll be interested to see how he evolves his kind of traditional texture use, and whether or not a lot of his storytelling remains hampered by the mainstream. I don't know if I should be assigning blame more to him or to the artists, or to the writers who give the artist the script mandate, but the the Frasier Irving that I want to see is the one that probably won't be dictated by the market. But we'll find out going forward. It's hard for me to at this point where I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, where the guy seems to be going is still influenced, of course, by the same way we all are to a certain degree, having to put food on the table and having to kind of just live. Like I said, I love the guy's work, and it'll be super interesting to see what happens. But I pine for the Frasier Irving original comic that isn't, of course, the way that I would pine for this sort of thing, that isn't based in a literal narrative, and that is much more art-focused and much more weirdly metaphorically obtuse, and is much more about an unconscious exploration of his just his image-making habits and you know, where that would lead him. That, I think, would be absolutely fascinating. But I will continue to buy the dude's work. You know, I don't know if that uncanny X-Men thing will interest anyone at all, really. And there's been whole portions of the guy's career that I've skipped over here, and all of this. You know, there's all of his collaborations with Cy Spurrier. You know, Gutsville. All of his cover work that you could draw, like you could talk about his approach to making covers and all of this. But if I can't see the Frasier Irving, the art comics guy, what I would, you know, say that I kind of would like out of Frasier Irving, you know, is a little more detailed backgrounds and a little more playfulness in the visual storytelling. And you can tell that a lot of, you know, again, it's the nature of being a painter as a cartoonist, in the sense that you have to draw a lot, you have to produce a lot of imagery, and when you're doing it in the painting focused way, where you have to render out in multi-stage layering, it takes a lot of time, and so you can't focus on getting perfect, you know, visual storytelling and interesting visual storytelling or whatever. But I would like to see less emphasis on textured backgrounds and all of this, and a little more structure that relies less on Frasier's mastery of figure work and less. I don't know. There's a strange weird clash in Frasier Irving's late period art that has these harshly rendered, you know, harshly lighted geometries. Like I'm thinking specifically here in Zombie, where there's hard and fast planes to how everything is that I think clashes in this very, very weird way with how with his mastery of drawing figures. So that and you can, again, you can say that that's part of the charm of the art, but it's a very weird discordance where the figures are rendered on a different, you know, on a different rule set than the geometries or the walls or the, you know, the cabinets or whatever it is. And that weird discordance, I'm not too much a fan. I don't know. I don't know what I'm asking for in this sense. But like I said, when I flip through Zombie and Shade, it looks the same in this way that you don't get from the more experimental phase. And if that's what the Frasier Irving image making idiom is going to be going forward, fine, sure, great. But like I say, I pine for more because I always do. You know, I would love to see a little more. It goes back to what I said, I think, in the Decadence Comics podcast about less a segmented sense of scale and proportion and whatnot, and more of a wide, you know, spectrum and gradation, and a highly not a highly segmented, but just, you know, a smooth transition between certain things, so that it doesn't feel like, okay, I've seen this exact same middle ground shot of how Frasier renders the you know, like exactly how he renders Bruce Wayne and exactly how he renders Shade, and in that sense of like that exact face, you know, with that lighting type and all of that. I don't know if, you know, I mean, that's the guy's style, duh. But, you know, writers, use him more interestingly, you know what I mean? And I know this is exactly what the fuck is going to happen with Brian Bendis. It's like, all these talking fucking heads are going to be there, and I can only hope that Frasier gets, like, interesting rendering and shapes in there with how he displays, how he draws characters and all of this. And certain amounts of that I can see in the covers that have been released and all of this, but, ooh, it's going to be a chore getting through those comics in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. Yeah, the Frasier Irving, the digital art chameleon, the the sable-brush traditionalist who became the digital prophet experimenter who, you know, eventually would go on to become one of the premier digital artists in the comic book field and who continues to transform and change and mess around with his rules, but continues to have a strong, strong grounding in figure work and in lighting, and in, especially high contrast lighting, and in experimental colors and textures. And that is kind of the fate of the digital artist or the digital painter in this sense, is that you're kind of, you know, you're limited by your rules and your old rules of image making, you know, this panel to panel thing. And kind of how I was going to tie it in with Aiden Koch, or however you pronounce her name, that has to do with what is the grammar of comics, and kind of what I've been getting at in the last bits of the podcast here, talking about where I'd like to see Frazier go, is more of playing with the language of painting. So, you know, having like what Aiden does, where there may be a full figure that's rendered, and then I think I saw this on her Tumblr like last month or something, you know, and then there's an outline of the figure that's, you know, juxtaposed just below it, you know, playing with image making, you know, kind of building up, you know, sequence and image juxtaposition in a non-linear, or maybe, you know, a non-literal sort of way. That is like I said, I'd love to see Frazier Irving, the art comics artist. That would be amazing. And of course, there's relatively little market for that, sure. But God, I'd love to see it. Yeah, Frazier Irving, the amazing chameleon. Definitely look up that Frankenstein project and check that out. And I don't know if Frazier actually like collected it in a single download or whatever, but you can definitely find it on his Tumblr. Follow Frazier on his Tumblr. Dude is awesome. Next week, THB, I guess. THB and the early formings of Paul Pope into who we know him as today. The proper cartoonists version of the language of the line, and the original fusion artist, you know what I mean. So yeah, next week THB. Thank you all for listening. I will see you then.
Everybody partying, DJ cutting like a ghetto Nessalina, and then someone used the headphones, mic jack, plugged it in, ready, steady, rocking it, that's gonna bring me back.
New age flows, black folks, it shows the new pain, homage and respect to the old school, rituals, catching hip-hop, holy ghost, see your old face roll,
that's gonna bring me back.
Get on my BMX, the terrific, winning to the sunshine, soul specific, soul is twisted, I need to touch the top, radio to the block, homie, do the wop and don't stop, life in the love, the kids, new kicks called dibs, on the last pop, trigger when she laugh and giggle and tickle me, Jack, don't forget about the rap, that's gonna bring me back.
Love, not hate, respect the creativity, talent and ability, that's gonna bring me back.
Strength, unity, town to town, gas prices going down,
that's gonna bring me back.
Cereal and milk, love and the breath, so funky, funky, fresh, that's gonna bring me. Jumping off a bridge with a bungee cord attached, see gravity react, that's gonna bring me back.
Gonna do right here, go back.
Smoking, now I'm reinvigorated off of just
Applejack.
Hanging in the sun rays, fishing with my pop pop. Running to the store, keeping a chain for pop rocks. Goody for the pretty chicks, candy on my tongue, wearing Sunday slacks. That's gonna bring me back.
Pride, the Cosby
show on Thursday nights. Whole family laughing hard to get right and live in color with the Wayans brothers. Chris Rock, Robert Townsend, Hollywood Shuffle. Don't stop Sinbad, Dave Chappelle, Flex, Bill Bellamy, Chris Tucker and Friday, Robin Hess. Hey, Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence, David Allen Greer, all hanging out in Boomerang. That's gonna bring me back.
Revolution change coming at y'all. See the people rise up and the government fall.
Love, not hate, respect the creativity, talent and ability. That's gonna bring me back.
Cereal and milk, laugh in the press. So funky, funky, fresh. That's gonna bring me back.
Jumping off a bridge with a bungee cord attached. See how gravity react. That's gonna bring me back.
Someday,
forget these things. Oh, you bring me back.
Some way,
it's a bar that going farther takes me back.
They say,
so there you have it, the gift of gab, Latif the truth speaker, head nodding, the mighty underdogs, you know how we do, town business, and we out.
That's just the next.